First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All righty. Halfway home on a Tuesday afternoon. First Name Sports. Greg Frank hanging with you until 4 o'clock in the Eastern time zone. So we've had plenty of other NBA headlines the last 48 to 72 hours. As, well, you may have been at a beach, drinking, doing whatever you might have been doing for the holiday weekend. There were some coaching hires made in the association the last few days. And we'll start with the biggest one, just in terms of name recognition, and the flashiest one, perhaps, is the Sixers replacing Doc Rivers with the former Toronto Raptors coach, Nick Nurse. As Daryl Morey reunites with Nick Nurse, Nurse had been the G League head coach for the Rockets affiliate when Morey was still running the Rockets. And I think this is an excellent hire for a team that needs to win right away. Because what did Nick Nurse do the moment he got to Toronto? He won on an NBA championship in 2019. And I know they brought in Kawhi Leonard, but I think the point is, if you are in win-now mode, Nick Nurse is the best option that you have available at your disposal to allow you to achieve those win-now aspirations. Because as I talked about during the playoffs, the Sixers have not been to the conference finals since 2001. Matter of fact, NBA TV tomorrow night is running a documentary on the 2001 Sixers with Larry Brown and as the head coach, Allen Iverson, Aaron McKee, Dikembe Mutombo, a team that lost in 5 games to the Lakers in the finals. But the one game they did win spoiled the Lakers from going 16-0 in the NBA playoffs that year, as that was their lone loss in the postseason for the Lakers. That's the last time that the Sixers have been to the conference finals. Okay, so for younger Sixers fans, they have not been alive for the Sixers to make the conference finals. And they've obviously been, the Sixers have been in a position where each season, that has been their bar for success or failure, and they've come up short every time. But the last 4 or 5 years, with healthy Joel Embiid, they've tried a lot of different rosters, a lot of different sidekicks, Jimmy Butler, James Harden, J.J. Redick, Markelle Fultz, Ben Simmons, all these guys coming and going. And the result has been they just cannot conquer the second round. And a part of the struggles in the second round came against Nurse in 2019 when the Raptors eliminated the Sixers in 7 games. Nick Nurse won right away, as I said, in Toronto. And even in the bubble year after Kawhi left, Toronto had a pretty good team. And they were in the second round of the playoffs, and I think it went 6 or 7 games, their second round series against the Boston Celtics. So this was not we had Kawhi Leonard 1 type of situation. They were second in the Eastern Conference in 2019-2020 and lost in 7 games to the Boston Celtics in the second round. So I think that season certainly validated Nick Nurse's coaching acumen a little bit more. And was still in the playoffs, gave the Sixers a hard-fought 6-game series last year, and got to the play-in tournament this year. And that's a bad year. But when you think about what happened with the roster and some of the atrophy that the Raptors suffered in the post-Kawhi Leonard era, I don't think you can really ever look at Nick Nurse's tenure there with Toronto and say, well, he underachieved that year. I guess they had 1 year where they missed the playoffs altogether, 2021. But by and large, this was a guy that did what he was supposed to do with the rosters at his disposal and now is going to be expected to, at the very least, get to the conference finals, probably the NBA finals with the Sixers. And I think that you looked at that team this year, again, they had the Celtics on the ropes. They should have won the series. Does it mean that they would have lost to the Heat? No. Maybe. Like, who knows? We don't know. Like, maybe the Heat obviously deserve a lot of credit. We sung their praises at the beginning of the show today. But I think the further removed you get from the Sixers' playoff exit, much the same way, the further, if you're a Celtics fan, the further you removed you get from last night, the more you'll realize, like, hey, you know, we are right there. The team is close. And what do we need to do to get over the hump? And in the case of the Sixers, I do think a coaching change was necessary. I think it was merited. Doc Rivers obviously had plenty of disappointments in the playoffs that continued post-Clippers with the Sixers. And Nurse, on the other hand, again, his teams have achieved to the level that they're supposed to achieve, it feels like, more often than not. So I think a very good hire by the Philadelphia 76ers. A little bit of a lesser name, I guess, to your casual fan, but the Milwaukee Bucks go with a very accomplished assistant coach, Adrian Griffin, who coached under Nick Nurse in Toronto. And, you know, if you're not going to get Nick Nurse, then if you wanted to pluck from that brain trust a little bit, you hire a highly credentialed assistant coach who actually started as an assistant in Milwaukee back in 2008. So I think that certainly this is a guy that has paid his dues and, you know, played against the Bucks in, or coached against the Bucks in the 2019 conference finals, which the Raptors won in six games. So, you know, Coach Jimmy Butler in Chicago as an assistant. So Russell Westbrook in Oklahoma City. And obviously Kawhi Leonard in Toronto. So worked with some superstars and now gets Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think this is just one where when you hire assistants, it's easy to think, oh, well, why weren't they going for a bigger name? But you don't, that's not always what you need, right? I mean, Mike Budenholzer, when he got there, had been a head coach before, but not a super successful one with the Atlanta Hawks. Had some moments that were, you know, some seasons that weren't bad in Atlanta, but then he ends up winning an NBA championship with the Bucks and is a Popovich disciple. 17 years under Popovich, Budenholzer spent. So, you know, you pay your dues. And in the case of Adrian Griffin, he has been an assistant with several different teams. And now he's getting a chance. So good for him. And we shall see how it works out. Clearly, Milwaukee felt it needed a different voice. And, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a sense of complacency that they felt that the team had kicked in. And they maybe were just going to beat Miami without Giannis and be fine. And, you know, for whatever reason, they made the change. And I think Adrian Griffin certainly should come in pretty motivated to prove his worth that, you know, hey, they're not wasting their vacancy on somebody that's unproven. You know, he's you know, never been a head coach, but as I said, paid his dues. And I like to see guys like that get a chance. Still no hires in Phoenix or in Toronto. Gosh, I so want the Suns to hire Glenn Rivers. It would just be it would be so funny if, after all of this, because again, I think when you look at the different renditions of the Clippers that he had, first the Lob City days with Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan, and Blake Griffin, and then the Kawhi Leonard, Paul George era, and, you know, countless choke jobs with them, and then it continues with the Sixers, and Ty Lue, by the way, takes over the Clippers and gets to a conference finals in 2021. It's something that I don't get why the Suns, a win-now team, would hire him. Like, we've seen this movie plenty of times before with star players coached by Glenn Rivers. And again, gosh, that championship in 2008 must be the most impressive championship ever if it's getting him more jobs. It'll be his third job if he gets the Suns' job since the Celtics. And I don't know, if I was him, maybe I would want to just take a year off, but sounds like he's very much in the mix there in the Valley. And the Raptors, I wonder a little bit about their direction. I think it's time for them to kind of go in the tank and rebuild a bit. Because I talked about how in the waning days with Nick Nurse, he didn't have a whole lot to work with there. And it just felt like, you know what? You push your chips into the middle of the table with Kawhi Leonard. It worked. You got your championship. You had a pretty good team the year after. Lost in seven to the Celtics in the second round. And slowly but surely ever since, it's been peeling back, peeling back, peeling back, tapering off, tapering off, tapering off. So I think that if I'm the Raptors, I would like they're the kind of team that should take a chance on somebody, and somebody were like, oh, who's that? Like somebody that maybe doesn't have a lot of credentials. Like we heard J.J. Redick's name come up for that job. Like I could kind of see it on the basis that, hey, if you're a rebuilding team, if they're going to enter a rebuild, like maybe you just say, hey, what do we have to lose? Let's throw a dart at the board here and maybe we'll hit the bullseye. So we'll see what the Raptors end up doing. And then some other NBA news, front office news. President and general manager of the Golden State Warriors, Bob Myers, stepping down. So he will not be back with the Warriors for 23-24. It seemed like this was a move that had been percolating for a while. There were plenty of rumblings behind the scenes about Myers maybe being ready to step away. And Myers saying, quote, it's just my time. So you could read into that. You might not, because, of course, Draymond Green can opt out and become a free agent in the offseason. So maybe there's like he feels it's his time because there's a inclination one way or another as to which way Draymond's leaning. I don't know if Draymond Green is, you know, that powerful enough of a player to really tilt the scales one way or another in terms of the future of the executive that calls the shots. But regardless, maybe he just feels like, you know, he needs to, you know, I talked about it with Pat Riley, excuse me, who's 78 and still chugging with the Heat. You know, Bob Myers is 48. Maybe he just feels like, hey, I've had a real good run here, 4 NBA championships, 2-time executive of the year, take a step back. And, you know, we saw Daryl Morey kind of do this with the Rockets and then come back and run the Sixers. I could certainly see that if in a year or two there's some, you know, rejuvenation from Bob Myers, but he will not be with the Warriors in the 23-24 NBA season. I had a little bit of an annoyance come up yesterday as I was leaving. I ran the board yesterday in the morning and rolled out of work and had something that I wanted to rant about. So I'm going to do it on the other side. Saad Youssef from The Athletic covers the Stars in 15 minutes. First Name Sports, Sports Jump Radio.
You're back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, so on Friday, I talked a little bit about how I think Memorial Day weekend is a little overrated, and the celebratory welcome to summer vibes, they don't really hit with me, because it's not like you're celebrating the beginning of the summer. You then have 3 months to do all those things in the actual summer. You know, it's not like a shorter, you know, like a Christmas into New Year's type deal where it's just a week and you want to kind of get away and have your fun or whatever. So I never really got into, I've never really done like a big Memorial Day bash. Even as somebody that grew up in the Northeast, I like going down the Jersey Shore, but it never quite hit to be there on that weekend, on Memorial Day weekend. And so, I wasn't really doing a whole lot with my Memorial Day weekend. I went out on Saturday night. And so I was around, and I helped out yesterday, ran the board, and, figured, why not? So I get out of here yesterday at 1 o'clock. We're based in Houston, 1 o'clock Central Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Time. And I decide that, so there's a, before I go any further with the story, there's a pizza place that I like here, which is about 25 minutes from my apartment. And John Belmore, I'll ask you, when it comes to whether it be fast food or even eating out, like this is like a Friday Five level question that I'll just ask you now. What's the longest like one way distance you would go for a meal, living in a metro area where there's a lot to pick from?
Yeah, especially in something as sprawling as Houston. are you talking like really good food here? Because it would have to be like my favorite to go across the city. And I'm choosing from my area if I can. But
yeah.
If I find something that I really like, I'll drive 25, 30 minutes for it.
Which is about what I was. Okay. Now, how often would you make that drive?
Not often. Like I would have to be on that side of town.
I don't think I've been to this pizza place for 2-3 months.
To be fair, if I lived in a city that wasn't home and I had something across the other side of the city that I could go to that made me feel like home, I'd probably do it a lot more.
Okay, which is kind of what this is.
It's kind of what this is,
because
yeah.
I'm a Northeast pizza lover, and I know that – and you guys don't – I appreciate the fact that you don't get offended when we say your pizza just is not – like it's just not what you guys
it's
know
It's not
for.
Great down
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So this pizza shop is owned by New Yorkers, and – The frustrating thing about and why I don't do it more is because I just don't like sitting in the traffic. I say 25 minutes. That's without traffic. So it's usually 50 minutes with traffic. And, you know, even days like I get out at 3 o'clock local time, it's probably late enough where I might start dealing with some afternoon rush. I mean, I don't know. Maybe now I'm just going to do it one of these days this week because yesterday didn't go the way I wanted to. But anyway, if you can't pick up on where the story was going, I was... You know, the whole weekend I sensed, like, you know, the traffic's not too bad. I know that Galveston's not that far, only about an hour from here. That's the popular beach that people go to in Southeast Texas. And so I decided, hey, it's 1 o'clock. I'm done. The traffic doesn't seem that bad. If there was ever a time to make the 25-minute drive, it would be today. So I go over there, and the place is closed. And, you know, I don't know enough about the management. You know, it could be they run a tight ship. They have maybe a smaller staff, and they want to give them off for Memorial Day. Like, on one hand, I get that. But on the other hand, I thought to myself, well, if you think about it, Thanksgiving and Christmas are really the only two holidays where you can pretty much safely say everybody in America is going to probably sit at home and cook a meal. Now, I shouldn't say everybody. I know that the Chinese restaurants are, it's usually like a thing that people do on one or both of those. But the large majority of the national population will have their family gathering and they'll have a meal on one of the both of those holidays. I know there's like cookout vibes with Memorial Day, 4th of July, but I don't think those are as mainstream in the sense that if you run a food business, you should just shut down on those summer holidays. And I'll give you an example in my life that made me think, oh, yeah, like this makes sense why the 4th of July would be a bigger one. I used to work at a radio station in small town Minnesota, and I got to know a bar owner there who I still talk to. He's a great guy who from North Jersey is a big Mets fan, and the Phillies are playing the Mets next 3 days, so I'll probably shoot him a text tonight and talk some trash. And that was our relationship, right? I would always go to his bar and hang out and talk, Philly sports, New York sports, and he made good New York pizza. And so 4th of July 2019, he needed help because his bar was right on a lake. Minnesota's called the Land of 10,000 Lakes. His bar was right on a lake, and he needed to, everybody went there at night for the fireworks, but during the day, there were always a lot of activities going around the lake as well. And so there would be a bunch of foot traffic that would just filter into his bar, and so he needed help to run. Like, he obviously wanted to be open on the 4th of July, and I helped him out one day. I think he had, like, a beer garden set up, and I helped, like, serve beer. And that was, like, the 4th of July was the busiest day of the year for him. And so I thought to myself, I think there's got to be enough, and Memorial Day is one of them, 4th of July, enough of these holidays where you just say to yourself, hey, I'm not really doing a whole lot else. It's a little bit more of a low-key day. Hey, you know, mom, dad, you want to go, like, grab a pie and get some lunch somewhere? Like, those are the vibes I get with some of those holidays. So when the place was closed, I was like, you're missing out on a clientele. Like, you're shaking your head, Jabel. You don't see this the same way I see it.
Yeah, I disagree with you. So I know Domino's Pizza is not on the level of the pizza you're talking about here.
Yeah,
I get that.
Okay.
But I worked at Domino's, 5-6 years back, however long ago it was. And everybody wanted off on Memorial Day, and I couldn't figure out why, because I thought everybody's going to be off work. They're going to want food. And it was the slowest day I have ever seen in the food industry. People are at home barbecuing. They're at home cooking. They're going to parties. They're doing stuff.
So
it is a slow day for restaurants.
You think that Cookouts and barbecues on Memorial Day are as mainstream as Thanksgiving dinners and Christmas.
It sure seems like it, at least from my experiences. Okay. And it would probably, if you're not going to get the type of business you usually need to pay your employees and keep the lights on and stuff, it's actually maybe beneficial to shut the thing down. So I think that's kind of what's going on here.
Maybe I'm just looking at it through my own, you know, singular lens. It's like I live by myself.
The guy who had the bar on the lake
in Minnesota, yeah.
That is a wonderful spot for him to take advantage of that. This pizza place is probably on a street, literally.
Yeah,
there's
you're
no
right.
like
I get that
advantage around
like
it.
The,
so.
The location dynamics.
Oh,
there
it,
are
it plays a huge part.
Yeah. Okay. Any other holidays where you like? So
Fourth of July and Memorial Day.
I should not even expect. Like, I shouldn't even try going there.
Probably not. Yeah. No.
By the way, I knew there was another point I wanted to make here. Is it so hard to just update the Google business list to stay close?
I know. You told me. You're like, Google says they're open,
Google's
so I'm going.
Now it says, it said Memorial Day may affect these hours.
Yeah, yeah.
But I figured, okay, maybe they open later, close earlier. It was 1 o'clock. It was middle of the afternoon.
Well, it's up to the business to update I guess, because Google can't go and do that.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, as a business, knowing that you have people that probably find out about you just by saying, where's this place? You know, where's the address? I'll just Google it.
I agree.
You see their hours. Update that then.
Well, I think the other way to do it is to make a voicemail or something that says it.
Maybe a voicemail. I could have just called and, you know, saved myself the trip, which I guess for the future I should do. Like, you know, I don't just trust the.
You got a nice afternoon drive. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Honestly, I didn't do anything with the afternoon. I kind of just like chilled and like I felt the other guys was on cable, which is a fun comedy that I like to watch. And so it's pretty rewatchable. But, you know. That was the one, I guess, saving grace in this was I got back and I was like, well, I'm back an hour later than I thought I'd be back, but there's nothing else that I have to do. So I got a drive out of it that didn't result in pizza, so ended up settling for the DiGiorno oven pizza yesterday. And
big downgrade.
Yeah, major. Now, I did text a few people, a few friends that I figured would be off and they're in the area and say, hey, you want to try this pizza place? Fortunately, none of them could do it because
they need to felt bad.
Yeah, then I would have been like, I really swung and missed here. So anyway, I guess you're right. I guess the cookouts and I get it. Like, and you're somebody that worked in the food industry. So it's just those two, though.
It's just those two. Because those days, people are just doing other things. It's just such a slow day for restaurants.
New Year's?
You know? I don't think New Year's is quite that way, but it might be.
Yeah.
It might be along those same
Labor Day?
Lines. Maybe. I mean, any holiday that you're going to have lots of people cooking out or going over to parties and stuff and indulging that way, you're going to have slow days for restaurants.
Yeah, fair enough. So I guess I'll give myself a yellow card for that one. Take a time out. We'll come back. Saad Youssef from The Athletic will join on the other side. He covers the Dallas Stars as their season concludes last night on home ice. Vegas is off to the Stanley Cup final. Dallas loses in 6 games. We'll talk with Saad next. And then I want to do a little segment on some social media spats, I guess, that we saw from the weekend. Half an hour to play on a Tuesday. First Thing Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, let's go back out to the Progressive Guest Line as we bring on Saad Youssef from The Athletic. He covers the Dallas Stars as their season concludes last night on home ice at American Airlines Center. Shut out by the Vegas Golden Knights 6-0. Saad, good to have you aboard. How are you?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing pretty well ourselves. So, how do you explain last night for the Stars? I mean, it looked like they were obviously not they it looked like they were. I mean, they were very much into the series finally, and it looked like they had played better in game 4 than they did the previous 3. Game 5 might have been their best game of the series. And then they just, you know, throw in another clunker there last night. What's the explanation?
You know, I think Pete DeBoer had a really honest assessment after the game where, you know, the elimination game energy and that you have to bring physically, mentally, emotionally, all that stuff. You know, I don't think there's just an unlimited amount of that. And you know, DeBoer mentioned that yesterday after the game where, you know, the Stars, game six was their fourth time, as he put it, their fourth time going into that well, going into that elimination game well, whereas Vegas, I don't believe, has faced an elimination game yet this season. And so, you know, it's funny because game five was really the one where the odds are all stacked against them. They're, you know, they got Vegas's attention by winning game four. They were in Vegas. They were still without Jamie Benn, still without Evgeny Dadonov. So that was the game where, you know, I really personally expected the Stars to lose. And then game six, you're thinking, well, you know, everything on paper looks great. You're coming back home. You're getting Jamie Benn back.
Right.
But like DeBoer said, you just run out of that mental and physical energy at times when facing elimination.
You mentioned Jamie Benn coming back. What was the vibe like talking to him after the game last night?
I mean, he was definitely heartbroken. You could tell he was taking it pretty hard. And, you know, it's kind of weird because I also covered Ben when he lost in the Stanley Cup final. I think that was the most down I've ever seen him. But yesterday was, you know, he was obviously, you know, it's not the Stanley Cup final. It's the round before, but, you know, you could tell it still hurt him pretty bad.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, obviously Pavelski, like Ryan Suter's a veteran, like, you get so close, and it's not something you can just get over, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, you know, we talked to Pavelski yesterday as well, and you know, that was another, you know, just another, you know, sombering moment for him where, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's turning 39 this summer, and he's under contract next year. He's going to be back, but, you know, it might really be his last chance or close to it, so... That kind of reality does set in every time, you know, these moments happen.
Saad Youssef, our guest, covers the Dallas Stars for The Athletic as their season concludes last night at the American Airlines Center with a 6-0 loss against the Vegas Golden Knights. And Saad, I think it's also interesting, and this was a question I knew I wanted to ask you, when you chunk the two overtime losses and then the two blowout losses at home, and, you know, how you kind of interpret those two different sets of losses, and do you look back and say, well, of course, if you get outscored 10-0 in two games at home, you're going to lose a series? Or do you say, hey, if they had just stolen one of those first two in Vegas, they're in a game seven? Like, which side of the equation do you land on?
You know, it's a little bit of both, but I lean a little bit more towards the latter, and the reason why is because, you know, it's not that Dallas needed to steal one of the games in Vegas. It's that Vegas stole game two from Dallas. Mm. Dallas was the better team in game two throughout, and then Ryan Suter had the terrible turnover at the end of regulation, and then the Stars had a terrible line change in overtime, and all of a sudden, a game that Dallas dominated throughout the entire game. Honestly, you know, watching every single game this postseason, game two in Vegas was maybe a top two or three game that Dallas has played this postseason. And for them not to win that game, I think that was that along with Jamie Benn's dangerous cross check was probably the two moments. I don't really think they lost the series in game six. They lost the series in game two and game three, but really in game two, to your point, you know, if Dallas wins that game one in overtime, that they steal that game from Vegas. But game two, Vegas stole the game from them, and that was the difference.
That's a good point. You mentioned the Ben cross check on Stone. I mean, it was so early in the game, it's really hard to project how that game three would have looked if that didn't happen. But I'm sure you've allowed yourself to think about that a little bit, right?
Yeah, and like I said, like I'm not, you know, I'm not biased one way or the other personally.
Right.
And so, like, for me, like I'm with you on that. Like, I don't look at game three and say that, you know, well, if Ben doesn't do that, the Stars win that game. It just becomes a throwaway game, but you can't throw away a game in the conference finals. That's the thing. So for me, like, yeah, I think, you know, that was just a terrible decision, a terrible play. Let's not also forget that Vegas was already up 1-0 when he did that,
right,
less than 2 minutes into the game. So I also think that, you know, Vegas probably it has a better chance of winning that game, even if that doesn't happen, but it certainly didn't help.
Saad, we've talked about some of the veterans on this team, but at the same time, while Pete DeBoer is a well-traveled coach, this was his first year with the Stars, and you get to a conference final. You have a goaltender that, you know, we certainly look at while he was inconsistent in the postseason. You point to and say he's going to be around for a while. You certainly figure Miro Heiskanen is going to be around for a while. A lot of these other key players, Roope Hintz, Jason Robertson, you look at and say there's a lot to work with here. So while there are some veterans that you wonder if they're going to get a crack at it as good as this one again, there's also a lot of players young or entering their primes where they give Stars fans reasons for optimism moving forward. So just how do you see the short-term future of the Dallas Stars?
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what I wrote, you know, last night in my postgame column. And to your point, there's two things. You don't know that you're going to get 78 points out of Jamie Benn again or 77 out of Pavelski again, just because, you know, Pavelski's 39, Jamie Benn is an aging power forward. Those are hard things to bank on. But if you're looking at what's coming up, the Dallas Stars are going to be a better team next year than what they were this year. That's just, you know, they have Logan Stankoven, who just had a 5.9 the Memorial Cup the other day. And you know, if it wasn't for Connor Bedard, he'd be the talk of the town in the WHL and juniors. Mm. And then they have Maverick Bork, their first round pick from 2020, who, you know, who is very promising and had a great year in the AHL. So those are two players that are going to upgrade the roster next year. Now, you know, again, you can't bank on Ben and Pavelski doing what they did again. But if they do, the rest of the roster is going to be improved. What Dallas needs to do, though, is really do something about the back end, because that's where they were exposed the most against Vegas.
So they go to the Stanley Cup Final in 2020, and then they have this run this year. And I mentioned, obviously, DeBoer in his first year, so it was still with Bonus in 2020. But is there a sense, too, that at least with the guys, both some of the, you know, the Heiskanens and the Hintzes that have been around and you figure are a part of the long-term future, but also with the veterans who we don't quite know how much longer they'll keep doing this, is there still, like, a level of confidence here that it's a strong locker room and, like, they've built a really good culture there?
Yeah, they do. They do have that belief, and you know, all that starts with Jim Neal. Like, that's mm-hmm. the kind of guys that Jim Neal likes to bring in. Typically, you know, there's not a lot of locker room cancers that enter the organization, and you know, and even if the occasional one slips through, the culture is so strong in Dallas. I mean, you know, last year Joe Pavelski wasn't even wearing a letter, and you know, that tells you how deep the leadership room is, where, you know, a former captain isn't even wearing a letter in the locker room. Obviously, he was this year. But Jamie Benn, Pavelski, Tyler Seguin, Miro Heiskanen, Jake Ottinger is one of the most respected leaders in that room, and he's only 24. Mm. So all those guys combined, I think, really do factor in big time.
All right, Saad, we got time for one more. As you get to relax a little bit and watch the Stanley Cup Final, what do you think? I mean, you look at these two teams. Florida has been on this crazy run, and Vegas has just been a model of consistency the entire season, for that matter. It should be a good series, right?
Oh, I can't wait. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, for me, it was going to be fun to watch in different ways, whether it was going to be Dallas or Vegas, because when I look at Florida, obviously they have a lot of playmakers, but it starts with Matthew Tkachuk. And, you know, I think with Tkachuk, it was going to be Tkachuk versus Miro for me, or it's going to be Tkachuk versus maybe the deepest D-core in the entire league. And then, obviously, you have to solve Bob in net, and yeah. You know, Aiden Hill has just been so great, you know, in his own right in this series. So it's just going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a fun duel between two contrasting styles.
There he is, Saad Youssef, covers the Dallas Stars from The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Great coverage all season long. Saad, really appreciate your time. Enjoy the Stanley Cup Final.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think he hit on it there, and we'll certainly dive into it more come Friday. But this is going to be, a really fun Stanley Cup Final when you look at the matchups and the storylines of Vegas trying to, as I said earlier, be the fastest expansion franchise to win the Stanley Cup versus the big Florida Panthers trying to get their first in franchise history, and the South Florida angle here with the Panthers and Heat, both in the finals in their respective sports. So it should be a lot of fun. And, you know, sucks it's only Tuesday. We got a couple days until the NBA Finals get started, and then still four more days until they drop the puck on the Stanley Cup Final. We will take a timeout. Some social media jabs being thrown over the weekend. Fair or foul? We'll get into what I'm talking about on the other side. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
back with First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, so a couple of sports teams had some fun with their victories over the holiday weekend. And I wanted to address this because, honestly, I think how you react to this kind of stuff says a lot about how you view social media, like what value you see in the platforms. If, you know, some people take it more seriously than I'd like, and, you know, that's, you know, and others is just like lighthearted, good fun that we all participate in. And so what I'm hinting at, I'll start with the one on Sunday, the Houston Astros clobber the Oakland A's, who, by the way, beat the Braves last night. But the A's, it's really bad. I mean, they are well on pace to be the worst team in the history of Major League Baseball. I think it's 29 or 30 wins they're on pace for, which puts them on pace for 130-plus losses. And the 1962 New York Mets have the record for the most losses in a Major League Baseball season with 120. So the A's are well behind that pace right now. And the Houston Astros scored 10 runs on the A's. And I think it was like a Yordan Alvarez home run or something. They tweeted the highlight out of the play that got them their 10th run. And it said, the tweet says, 10 runs in front of tens of fans. Of course, if you are not in the know with what's going on with the Oakland A's, well, I kind of just told you a lot of what you needed to know. There's also a relocation that is very much imminent, it seems, to Vegas. And, you know, I at least feel that these kinds of relocation stories are sad, and it's disappointing, and it's not exactly a grave I would choose to dance on. And the team sucks, and nobody goes to the games. And I guess having said that, though, like, it was interesting seeing the kind of polar opposite reaction. I think this is a lot of, again, gets to the core of what I'm saying about how you use social media. For some people, it's they take it too seriously, and there were people that felt, oh, this is like such poor taste, and oh, apologize, Astro social media, like, come on, how do you do this? And there were others that were just like, oh, like, that was funny. Like, you know, like, they just made a joke that nobody's at this game. And, like they're not necessarily even thinking about the context of the A's and all the losing. And, like, it could have been the Marlins or, you know, gosh, the Rays are good. They don't draw well. Like, whatever team was bad, they could have made that same joke. And I'm sure the people that thought it was funny would have thought it was just as funny if it was a different team. But I think the thing that people were up in arms about was the fact that it was the A's, and you had that background context that I talked about. John Bellmer, as an Astros fan, I'm sure you thought it was funny.
I mean, I did think it was funny, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I do feel bad for the fans that are losing a team. And that's, I think, kind of the angle that all
that people
the,
are saying, like, yeah, hey. Like,
it's like, hey, you're kind of attacking. But I would say, like,
you're dancing
it
on a
sucks
grave
for
here.
Them. But I would say if maybe you guys would actually show up to the game.
See, now that is the one thing. In some cases, you're right. There is just no appetite for it. But they have been in Oakland for 55, 60 years or whatever. And you don't do that in any market without fans. And
I understand.
And I think, and I have, without getting too much into the A's situation, because that's not the point of this segment, I do think that there is some perhaps ownership-driven decisions that have, they want to get to Vegas, and part of getting there is, well, let's just make the team bad so no one shows up and we can say, oh, well, nobody cares about the A's here.
Well, you kind of open yourself up for this then, right?
You do. Yeah, I guess you're right. Like, if you're going to make that decision, I guess what I'm saying is I do think that there are people that care about the A's in Oakland. That, like, why would they go? Like, why would you want to come out and see this awful team? But again, back to the point, like, is it something that you can, like, ultimately, I'm okay with it. Like, I think that it's probably not something I would have done if I was the social media manager for the Astros, but I'm also not, like, I think they deleted the tweet. Like, I don't know
if they did. I'm not sure.
I thought they did.
Yeah, I hope they didn't. I would say
they did not. Okay. Yeah.
I hope they don't. I know it's a bit weird, but
it's kind
this
of a touchy
is
subject.
One
but
of the few ways that a team gets injected some personality, because most of the coaches, the front office, everybody you talk to, you're going to get the cookie cutter answers from everything. This is a way for, like, to have fun on social media. Don't take it too seriously.
They did delete.
If it was flip flopped. Like, I guarantee you, you'd get the same type of tweet from the A's social media.
You know, when you put it that way, you're right. Like, and I do think that a lot of the pitchforks being thrown are because of the relocation and all the things that we talked about that are disappointing. And so it's like, why are you kicking them while they're down? But you're right. If it was another team that just didn't draw well. Like, the Astros weren't drawing well when they were losing 100 games here.
100%.
In Houston. And there wasn't any threat of relocation, but I'm sure plenty of people danced
took
on the
shots.
Astros.
Took shots.
Yeah, it's part of sports.
It's part of it.
And yeah, they did delete the tweet. I think that's... Aww. Yeah. So, anyway. And then last night, the Dallas Stars were clowned by the Vegas Golden Knights. The Vegas Twitter handle spelled out, they just tweeted Dallas with four L's. And you're laughing at that. Like,
yeah, I hadn't seen it. I was going to ask you about it. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. So you're all for social media fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just wish people didn't take it so seriously.
And that's the problem. I think that we do live in a society in which some people feel like, hey, I can unload and say whatever I want behind the screen, so why wouldn't I do that? And, you know, I think it's... It creates this society where things like this aren't that serious.
Yeah.
And they become serious.
Do you remember when Wendy's started going after McDonald's and Taco Bell and Burger King on social media?
I don't, but I, like, just in hearing that, that's funny to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I agree. I think it draws, like, attention and, like, creates conversation. Like, even if it's something so, like, simple, if you have two teams that are rivals,
sure,
like, real-life rivalries, and the social media is going back and forth, that's nothing but good. It's nothing but good attention for the league, for the rivalries, everything. I don't understand.
So
are you
a believer that all press is good press?
Yes. Lean into it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I guess if you're the A's or if you're an A's fan, like, you're not even that mad about it. Like, it's just like, yeah, like, this is what we are right now. It sucks, but yeah, we're a national laughingstock.
I think most of the criticism came from people outside of the A's organization.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think a lot of people were like, well, the Astros are a scummy organization. Not that I didn't already know that, but, you know, I think that there was a lot of that. And, you know, I do wonder, like, what goes on, because this was the other point that we talked a little bit about this in show prep. What goes through the brains of social media managers? Because clearly somebody thought, hey, like, I mean, it got out there. So, like, somebody thought, hey, this would be funny. Let's make this joke. And then is it the same person that's then seeing that reaction that's like, that didn't hit the way I thought it would. I'm going to take this down. Are there other people in the social department, or maybe it's somebody outside the social department that's like, hey, you know, like, that one's probably a swing and a miss. Like, so what goes into the decisions on behalf of these organizations with their social accounts to then decide, all right, that's funny and we'll allow that, but we shouldn't do that. And clearly you had, in the case of the Astros, you either had different people on opposite sides of the spectrum and so it got deleted, or you had the same person realize this wasn't universally funny the way I thought it would be, so I should just delete it.
I think it was universally funny. I think most people liked it, but the backlash, you're just like, I'd rather just take it down
and not
cause a distraction. Because as soon as reporters start asking Astros players and coaches what they thought about it, it's gone too far.
That's
it's a
true.
Distraction.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
Yeah, and that's true. When it comes to managing things like social media accounts, if you and I are like, it's funny, like it's not that serious, but you don't want it getting into the clubhouse because then it can become like, as you said, distraction, a little more serious than you would like. So I don't know that I ever have aspirations of being a social media manager, but I do think that some of those, the ways in which they think and the way in which they put out content is something to, at the very least, ponder the thought process about, which was the point of the segment. And with that, that does it for our first show of the week. My name is Greg Frank. Thanks to John Belmore for producing. Thanks to our guests, Bobby Kravitsky and Saad Youssef today. We're back again tomorrow from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 to 3 Central. Sports Kings is up next. This has been First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network.